This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After New Hampshire, the presidential races in both parties remain wide open. An unseasonably warm January day saw record numbers come out to vote yesterday. Just a few weeks ago, it seemed most unlikely that John McCain would be counted among the contenders, and as recently as yesterday, Hillary Clinton's campaign appeared to be foundering. Their victories transform a race that will develop very quickly from here. 27 states hold primaries or caucuses over the next month. We'll talk about what happened, why, and what it all means for the candidates as they head for Michigan, South Carolina, and Super Tuesday. And we want to hear from you. If you want to know more about what happened in New Hampshire, we have three phone lines today, one for Republicans, one for Democrats, and one for independents. The independent line is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. The Republican line, 800-344-3893. Again, that's 800-344-3893 for Republicans. And the number for Democrats is 800-344-3864. Again, for Democrats, 800-344-3864. And everybody can send us email. That address is talk@npr.org. We begin in New Hampshire. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, joins us from the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord. Hey, Ken.
Wow.
Wow. Yes, indeed.
That's the word.
Also in Concord is Arnie Arneson. She hosts radio and TV programs on politics and used to be a Democratic member of the New Hampshire House of Representatives. And nice to have you back with us.
Can I make a song request? What a difference a day makes, I think, is what I'm looking for right now.
Well, the polls got it just about exactly right for John McCain winning the Republican primary in New Hampshire, but missed the call by a mile on Hillary Clinton's win on the Democratic side. Ken, let's start with you. What happened?
Well, good question. I think if you had a fourth phone line, it would be people calling in saying that they never saw this coming. And that's true about almost everybody I spoke to here. They just didn't see it coming. They thought that not only did Obama have momentum coming out of Iowa, but that Clinton was not only going to lose, but her campaign was in trouble. They were talking about laying off staffers, maybe they even laying off Bill Clinton, for God's sakes. It was really talking about a big upheaval. Obama was getting young voters. He was going to do as well with women as he did in Iowa. And again, everybody was talking about whether Hillary Clinton could survive to February 5th states. And yet, not only has she survived, she is the true comeback kid. I mean, she's finally a Clinton who actually won New Hampshire. Bill Clinton didn't win in 92, although we'd like to say he was a comeback kid. But it was just startling, startling stuff. And we all had it wrong.
And Arnie Arneson, one of the big differences was in women voters in Iowa. Barack Obama won a narrow plurality of the women voting in that race. And then in New Hampshire, that completely turned around for Hillary Clinton.
Well, a couple of things happened. First of all, the debate performance on Saturday night was not exactly a strong suit for Barack Obama. And Hillary Clinton looked like she was getting beaten up by the two men, John Edwards and Barack Obama. And I think that offended some people. And Hillary was tough, let's be honest. The other thing was it was her meltdown on Monday morning. And a lot of people are saying, well, people were reacting to her tears. I actually don't think so. Remember, she was targeting older women. She was targeting poorer families. And they don't listen, no offense, to public radio. They do listen to talk radio, and conservative talk radio was all over her about the tears. They were brutal. I mean brutal. And I know a lot of women, and I actually made calls this morning, who basically were so angry because they weren't sure what they were going to do. But after hearing those attacks on a credible, articulate woman who could in fact be president, they walked into the voting booth, they took their middle finger, and they voted for Hillary Clinton because they said, you know what? They've got to stop. Having emotion is a strength and not a weakness. You have to understand there was a synergy going on here. A lot of the polling data did not reflect that. Hillary Clinton's own internal polling suggested an 11-point spread. So the Clintons got it wrong, too. It was a surprise to not just the pundits, but to the candidates themselves.
In the unlikely event, you're among the very few who did not get a chance to listen to that emotional moment that Arnie Arneson was talking about. This is what happened on Monday.
It's not easy. It's not easy. And I couldn't do it if I just didn't, you know, passionately believe it was the right thing to do. You know, I have so many opportunities from this country. I just don't want to see us fall backwards. You know, so...
And Arnie Arneson, you know this state awfully well. You really think that had a huge impact?
No, but nothing. Remember, this is a small spread. If Barack Obama had, you know, not won with such an overwhelming sense of strength in Iowa, this would have been a win for Barack Obama. You're not talking about a lot of votes, but this is a synergistic effect. You saw what happened, for example, with John McCain. A lot of independents saw the polling numbers, said, oh, Barack Obama has a strong spread. He doesn't need my vote, because they were toying between McCain and Obama. My husband literally walked into the voting booth in tears. He did not know what to do. So factor in the independence, factor in the debate, factor in this phenomena about what happened with the cry. She had a great GOTV. Understand, Jeanne Shaheen was working on this campaign.
That's the former governor of the state. Yeah.
Exactly. And she has run presidential campaigns. She has run a statewide campaign. She's actually warming up for what's going to happen in November of 2008 when she runs against John Sununu. This is synergistic. And also there's something that we feel uncomfortable about. But if you look at whenever the polls have been proven so wrong and nobody quite gets it and every poll is wrong, there has been an interesting factor that occurs in those races. And that is a question of race. And nobody wants to talk about it. But I think if nothing else, we have to remember New Hampshire was the last state in the nation to embrace Martin Luther King's birthday. That may have only impacted 1% or 2%, but those numbers all together could make a difference.
Neil, yeah. Can I expand on that a little bit? We talk about, you know, the difference with Iowa is that it was a caucus system, so you voted out in the open. You didn't have secret ballots. So people who may have said they were for Obama, well, they came out for Obama because it was public. And also in Iowa, you had the option, if you supported another candidate who didn't do well, who didn't meet a threshold, you can vote for a second choice. And in many ways, Hillary Clinton was not anybody's second choice, but Barack Obama was. But we've seen in polls where African-American candidates have run before, where the polls show they do well. I think of Tom Bradley when he ran for governor of California in 1982. I think of Doug Wilder when he was elected governor of Virginia in 1989, but the polls showed him winning much larger margin than it turned out to be. It's always interesting when there's a black and white candidate on the ballot what they tell pollsters. I'm not saying that's what happened, but again, that's another factor that could be taken into consideration.
And can I bring this back to a celebration, though, Neil?
Think
about it. Woman beats black. We're talking about running for president of the United States and a real strategic nominee who might, in fact, win the nomination. I mean, in some ways, just the idea of who is running and what the competition looks like is really a celebration of how things have changed, at least on the Democratic side of the aisle.
And again, if you'd like to join our conversation, the number for independents is 800-989-8255. Republicans, 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. And we also want to be talking with Ann Lewis, joining us on the line from Washington, D.C. She's a senior advisor to Hillary Clinton, and congratulations on the victory last night.
Well, thank you. It's feeling good.
And as we mentioned earlier on this program, it wasn't just outside pollsters who had Senator Clinton behind. Yesterday on the tracking polls, your own internal polls said the same thing. What do you think happened?
I think we were being very cautious, and that's a smart way to be in politics. But two, I think what happened, and we did see it in the crowds that Hillary was attracting, in the response that she was getting, and you know, she came back to us at the end of the day and said, people really want to hear from me. There's something going on out there, and it may turn out that her feel for the crowd and the responses she was getting will be more accurate than some of our polls, which is interesting.
Hmm.
I think this began when Hillary framed the choice on Saturday night at the debate, when she said, you know, you're really going to choose between talk and action. And I would say it is, we've got a number of candidates who are saying the right thing. We have one candidate who has this record of doing the right thing.
And today,
as she talked to people about, here are the differences I've made by working for you and fighting for you, here's what I want to go on doing, that really connected in voters' minds. They liked what they heard, and they thought, yeah, that is the kind of president we want.
And Ann Lewis, I know that the candidate and her husband and top advisors are gathering today to consider, well, the thought was what to do with a floundering campaign. Now things look very different. Is the campaign going to go full steam into South Carolina and into Nevada, where today Barack Obama got an important endorsement from the Culinary Workers Union?
Yes, we're going forward. You know, we knew this was a national election. Let's be clear. There are 21 states that are all going to hold their primaries and caucuses on February 5th. That is, somebody said that's not Super Tuesday anymore, that's Tsunami Tuesday. Well, we knew that we had to be present and available in those states. Let me tell you something of what's happening today, because it's not as if we're just sitting around. Today in Nevada, Congresswoman Shelley Berkley, very popular congresswoman, endorsed Senator Clinton. The Biden for president director in Nevada endorsed Senator Clinton. So we've had a great organization in place in Nevada. We just added two very, very important people. In South Carolina today, we've got phone banks going. In California, they've got an event they call Bring Your Own Phone, where you bring your own cell phone and work from lists the campaign gives you. We've announced our steering committee in Minnesota, and they're going to be doing their press conference today, rolling out their campaign plans. Governor Ruth Miner of Delaware, who was, again, a Biden supporter, a Joe Biden supporter, has endorsed Senator Clinton today. So there are more than half a dozen states where we have activities going on right now in the states. We're moving forward.
Ann Lewis, again, congratulations and thanks very much.
My pleasure.
And Arnie Arneson, before we lose you, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the Republican side of the campaign. Again, John McCain's victory was expected, but still no less surprising than where he came from just a couple of weeks ago.
I've called this race the M&M races. On the R's, message trumped money. On the D's, machine trumped magic. And yet, let's go back to January of 2007, Neil. It was McCain and Clinton, inevitable. Now we're saying McCain and Clinton in January 2008. Wow, how did that headline happen? So guess what? The pundits were right. They were just right a year early, Neil. That's the problem. I think what you saw with John McCain, there was a great cartoon in the Concord Monitor today by Mike Marland. I recommend everyone go to the Concord Monitor. You see this pile of money, which is supposed to represent the ashes. You see a McCain that looks like a phoenix coming out of the pile of Mitt money. And I think that tells it all, that what you have is John McCain really re-engaging voters. Mitt Romney, obviously not able to re-establish himself or ever establish himself. He ran very much of a market-driven campaign, a corporate ad campaign. What he didn't get was a voting campaign.
Arnie Arneson hosts the New Hampshire radio program Chowder in the Morning and the TV program Political Chowder. She joined us from New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord. Thanks very much for your time. Ken Rudin, stay with us, and we're going to be back talking with two campaign consultants about where the races go from here. And again, we'd like you to join us. 800-989-8255 for independents. We'll give the numbers for Republicans and Democrats when we come back. Stay with us. It's NPR News. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It was a big night in New Hampshire for Hillary Clinton and John McCain last night with record turnout. We're now going to talk more about the effect of those results on the campaigns and where they go from here, and we'll take your calls. Independents can call us at 800-989-8255. Republicans, 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Still with us is NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. And let me introduce two men who have a lot of experience running presidential campaigns and advising candidates. Steve McMahon was a political strategist and media advisor for Howard Dean during his presidential run in 2004. And nice to have you with us, Steve.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Scott Reed was Bob Dole's campaign manager in 1996 and his former executive director of the Republican National Committee. And thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
They both join us here in Studio 3A. And let me ask you, and Scott Reed, let me start with you. Is John McCain now a front runner?
Oh, I think it's fair to say McCain is now the front runner for the next week. It's all about Michigan. That's the next big hurdle a week from today. And McCain did what he needed to do. 6 months ago, he was considered politically dead. He's come back. He did it all through a lot of grit and muscle and spending time in New Hampshire, having 100 town hall meetings. And he stuck to a basic message of experience, knowledge, and judgment. And that carried the day yesterday in New Hampshire, again, not just with independents, which everybody thought he would do, but he also carried the day with Republicans, which was a real surprise to a lot of people in the party.
And unusual, to say the least, in the Republican Party to have four active candidates this late in the campaign.
Unusual, and this race is wide open. You know, this was, everybody talked for the last week about change. Well, what really changed here is both these races are now wide open. It's a wide open race for the nomination. We do have four good candidates on the Republican side, and it looks like South Carolina, once again, is going to be the deciding state for Republicans.
Steve McMahon, is this now a two-person race on the Democratic side?
Well, for all intents and purposes, I think it probably is a two-person race. I mean, John Edwards is running a great campaign. He's saying all the right things, but he just can't seem to get any attention from the media. He does, however, continue to get, 15, 17, 18, 20%. And that's going to be a factor in this race because he now is, I think, probably Hillary Clinton's best friend in this thing because he keeps the change vote from consolidating around Barack Obama. And he's probably Barack Obama's biggest impediment to getting the nomination. So John Edwards' role in this is going to be significant at some point. I just don't think it's going to be significant in the way that he would like.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. Bob joins us on the Republican line. Bob calling from Nashua in New Hampshire.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Talk about Mitt Romney. I'm an unhappy camper here in the New Hampshire primary at the moment. I love John McCain in 2000, a great military guy. I served in Vietnam. I appreciate him. He's a great guy for the Senate. I don't think anybody understands these two items except Romney. The first one is Alan Greenspan's comment in his book that 95% of American workers have not kept up with inflation for the past 6 years. 95% of American workers. That's what's wrong.
Okay.
Second thing that's wrong is they haven't read Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat, to understand what's happened in the last 7 years with the businesses.
Well, let me turn...
And why everything's gone overseas. Romney's the only guy that understands it. He's got the skills to do something about it. He ran a lousy campaign because he didn't talk about that. I think they're all going to retool. I don't think John McCain knows either of those two facts or really has any experience with that. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy, just not the right guy for me. For the next 4 years, he was the guy for the last 8 years.
Scott Reed, Mitt Romney banked an awful lot and spent an awful lot of money to try to win in both Iowa and New Hampshire. He ended up finishing second both times.
Yes, and Romney, this is one case where I think if there was actually more time between Iowa and New Hampshire, I think Romney possibly could have been able to catch McCain and beat him. Romney had a very good performance in the forum Sunday night on Fox. He got a lot of good feedback on that, and he was actually gaining some momentum. If you notice what McCain did today when he went to Michigan, he talked about the economy. He talked about job loss and the recession that Michigan is actually experiencing, and he's attempted to pivot exactly to the caller's point to some of these issues that are a lot more relevant out in Michigan and are going to play out further down the calendar.
Let's see if we can get Angie on the line. Angie calling on the Democratic line from Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, thanks for taking my call. It kind of plays right into the comment. What's going to happen with the Democrats in Michigan? As a former resident of Michigan, I'm very concerned because a lot of my family's there. I know that because they moved up the primary date on the Democratic side, I don't believe any of the candidates are coming to campaign in Michigan. Is that correct? And how will that affect Michigan in the overall choice of the Democratic candidate for president?
Steve McMahon?
That's an interesting question, Angie. You're absolutely right. The Democratic candidates have pledged not to campaign in Michigan, and they won't be. In fact, I think most Democratic candidates, with the exception of Chris Dodd and Hillary Clinton, petitioned to have their names removed from the ballot. And, of course, the Democratic National Committee, when Michigan moved its primary up in violation of the rules, took away all of Michigan's delegates. So on the Democratic side, the Michigan campaign, if there is one, and the Michigan election is going to be as if it didn't occur. It's not going to probably be... It certainly isn't going to have any political impact in terms of delegates, and I don't even think the media is going to pay attention to it.
Mm. Kent Rudin, let me ask you, isn't something similar in effect in Florida as well?
Same kind of thing. Both Florida and Michigan moved up their primaries to dates that encroached on the early states, not approved by the national parties. But unlike Michigan for the Democrats, the Republicans are campaigning hard there. Obviously, Mitt Romney, that's one of Mitt Romney's home states. His father was governor there for 8 years in the 1960s. And, of course, John McCain won the primary there in 2000 with the help of crossover Democrats and independents. So if there is no real Democratic contest in Michigan to speak of, perhaps these Democrats could come over and give McCain another victory. And that's true about Florida as well. Democratic candidates are not campaigning there. But as you know, Rudy Giuliani has been living there since the last couple of weeks. He's not did not compete much in Iowa and did worse than expected than he hoped in New Hampshire. So the Republicans have a big state there, big hopes for that state when they vote on January 29th.
Angie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's now go to this is Rich. Rich with us from Savannah, Georgia on the Republican line.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I wanted to call in and just say that I think that a lot of the people are discounting a lot of candidates too early, such as, first of all, today you guys are talking about Ron Paul and Brett Thompson basically not even being in the race. And I'd like to remind you that in 1964, Barry Goldwater lost New Hampshire to a write-in candidate. And was nowhere in the polls and went on to win in the primaries.
Let me turn to our Republican expert, Scott Reed. Are Ron Paul and Fred Thompson effectively in the race anymore?
I think they are, but for two different reasons. Ron Paul has created a lot of enthusiasm. He's kind of struck that libertarian core to the Republican Party, raised an incredible amount of money, and has enough money to go on down the calendar. Fred Thompson's in a little different situation. He really got smoked last night in New Hampshire. He is having some finance problems right now. He says he's going to stay in through South Carolina, but South Carolina is really do or die for Thompson. This thing about this nomination, the calendar really matters, and it really winnows out the field. And just like what Romney's experiencing today, if you don't win somewhere, it's hard to carry on like you can win. And that's what the candidates are all waking up to today.
All right.
And let me tell you why the Goldwater analogy doesn't work there, because back in 1964, it was really Goldwater versus Nelson Rockefeller for the nomination, and it was a primary contest that went from March all the way up to June. Scott is absolutely right. It's a compressed primary schedule, but also there's like five leading Republican candidates this time. So for Fred Thompson to get 1% in the New Hampshire primary and think that's going to springboard him somewhere to a victory down the line, perhaps South Carolina, I think is wishful thinking.
Can I make one more
point? If you keep it short, Rich.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to a previous Republican caller that there is one candidate out there that is mentioning inflation, and he mentions it every time he talks, and that is Ron Paul. That's all I'd like to say. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Rich. We have a couple of emails on going back to New Hampshire. This from Jill in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm a New Hampshire voter, was undecided till I walked into the polling station at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I really wanted to vote for Bill Richardson, but felt he had no chance of winning and wanted to make my vote count. So after listening to the polls and talking to others, my choice was narrowed to either Barack Obama or John McCain. Because the polls were stating Obama had such a huge lead, I decided to vote for John McCain, as I had done in 2000. A number of people I spoke with after voting did the same. After some discussion today, it turns out we should have gone with our instincts and voted for Obama. And this one from Dennis in Springfield, Illinois. Is there any evidence that independents and others who thought Obama was going to win voted to help McCain or simply decided not to turn out? And what's the media doing now is just the same thing they did after Iowa, overemphasizing results. Well, Ken Rudin, let me put that to you. Is there any evidence that independents went for McCain as opposed to going for Obama?
Well, there's a lot of theories about that. I mean, of course, initially we said that more independents voted on the Democratic side, given their antipathy for the war and, of course, John McCain's support for it. But at the same time, it's very possible that many independents who switched to the Republican Party in 2000 when they voted for McCain never switched back to independents, so they had no choice but to stay as a Republican voter. So there's a possibility of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Steve McMahon?
I think there may be some evidence that there were independents who went over and voted for John McCain who might otherwise have voted for Barack Obama. And the reason for that is this. There are 42 to 45% of the voters in New Hampshire are independents. And it looked like from the exit polls, about 42% of each primary was independent. I think there were a lot of people who thought that perhaps the independent number in the Democratic primary could have gone much, much higher. But it didn't, partly because I think there were people like the viewer who might have gone for either Barack Obama or John McCain, felt like the Obama-Clinton thing was settled, and went over to the Republican primary. We'll never know, of course. The theories will abound forever. But I do think there is some evidence in the exit polls that may have been occurring.
As we go ahead, it looks as if in open primary states, Barack Obama will have that advantage of having independents probably break for him. As you look ahead, though, a lot of the states coming up are closed primaries. Only Democrats get to vote in those.
There are two things that are coming up that are significant. One of them is Senator Clinton won Democrats by about 12 points over Barack Obama yesterday. And that's huge news for her and for her campaign, particularly as you go into some of these states where there are closed primaries, which means only Democrats can vote. But there's one other thing that's about to happen. We've come out of two states that are about 95-96% white, and we're going into states that where as much as half of the electorate are African American, and states where the Hispanic population is going to begin to vote. There was a poll that just came out in South Carolina two nights ago that had Barack Obama up 20 points over Hillary Clinton, 50-30. I think John Edwards is around 17. I don't expect that number to hold because I do think the momentum has changed and we've hit the reset button in terms of expectations. But I do think that Barack Obama comes in to a state with a significant minority population with a significant advantage. Hillary's going to have an advantage with Democratic rank and file voters. Barack Obama is now going to start getting people who are at the base of the Democratic Party who are available to him. And those people just didn't live in Iowa or New Hampshire. So
and
it's going to be
Scott Reed on the Republican side. Again, John McCain looking forward to states with open primaries where, again, he can pick up independent voters.
Michigan is the next event. It is an open primary. As Steve mentioned earlier, the Democrats are not even competing in the state, so there'll even be an opportunity for some Democrats to vote for McCain or for Romney or for Huckabee. It changes everything when you have one of these open primaries. Again, that's why the calendar matters so much when you look at these races.
Scott Reed was the campaign manager for Bob Dole in 1996, also with a Steve McMahon, who was a media advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign 4 years ago. And NPR's political editor Ken Rudin is with us. You're listening to an NPR News special on the New Hampshire primary. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is on the independent line, Kathy from Kalamazoo in Michigan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I have listened to talk radio and the talking heads on TV for months about the election, and I've seen them really pile on Hillary lately. And unfortunately, none of them have mentioned the fact, as Gloria Steinem did in the New York Times, that if Barack Obama were female, he wouldn't be as far as he is today. Nobody's really called him on his record, voting present so many times in Illinois when the hard questions came. Hillary has the experience. You've seen the national media really pile on to Hillary. It's almost embarrassing to watch the debates and see Edwards and Obama and Richardson, too, pile on Hillary. And as a professional woman who's often the only woman in a room full of 20 or 30 men, you know, it is so clear to the working women out there, they decided that they were going to actually get a babysitter and go and vote.
Women were certainly a decisive factor in New Hampshire yesterday for Hillary Clinton.
I think, Kathy, many women who watched the debate had exactly the same reaction that you had. In fact, I believe that it was Hillary Clinton appearing finally, really for the first time on the campaign trail, like a human being and displaying some emotion, both in the debate when she had that light moment where she said, "That really hurts my feelings," and then the next day where she actually had an emotional moment in a meeting in a response to a question that had a big impact on the election. If you look at the exit polls, again, people who decided within the last week decided by 4 points for Barack Obama. People who decided in the last day decided by 3 points for Hillary Clinton. So you're not the only person who's had this reaction. But I will say this about the national media. The national media follows the race, and it follows the trends, and it follows the momentum. And it wasn't but about 4 months ago maybe, that the national media was saying Barack Obama's campaign was dead and Hillary Clinton was all but the inevitable nominee. That certainly occurred 4 years ago with Howard Dean. And, you know, when things change, the media just sort of follows the pack. I don't think that they're doing anything intentional to favor or not favor an individual candidate. I just think they're following a pack.
Okay. Well, notice the subtleties. You have Chris Matthews calling Benazir Bhutto Benazir and Musharraf Musharraf. You have all the media calling Clinton Hillary, and yet you call Obama Obama.
Well, but Kathy,
well, nobody...
Maybe so, but just notice...
Go ahead, Ken.
Kathy, nobody calls Hillary more than Hillary does. If you look at her campaign website, if you look at her campaign, if you look at her signs all over Manchester, New Hampshire, all over the state, it's Hillary, it's not Clinton. So if anybody's calling her Hillary, it's the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Well, that may be. However, it's the subtle way that men put women down. I've been at many meetings. They'll call me Kathy, and they'll call the man Mr. Smith.
Okay.
And other women will agree with me. You watch. They'll call in.
Okay, Kathy. Bye. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Here's a question for Ken from Elizabeth in Tempe, Arizona. Which is more important, the percentage by which the candidates win or the number of delegates they receive? Obama and Clinton got the same number from New Hampshire. Can someone explain how this actually works to a mere mortal like myself?
Well, it's proportional. Certainly in every Democratic primary caucus, it's proportional. Unlike some Republican states, it's winner-take-all. But if you get 35% of the vote in New Hampshire, you get roughly 35% of the delegates. And so given the fact that it was Mrs. Clinton, 39, Mr. Obama, 36, then obviously that's not much of a difference. So obviously the delegate numbers are the same. But right now, I think, you know, for us to be talking about delegates, I think really it's about momentum. And I think it's about a head of steam going into the next primary in the next week. We saw Obama coming out with a head of steam of Iowa. Now it's Clinton's turn. But the point is, only if there's a real we get close to a convention. Like we remember Kennedy and Carter in 1980 or Reagan and Ford in 1976 when the battles go all the way to the convention. Do the delegate numbers matter? What really matters right now is momentum and the perception of who's leading and who's going to be the next nominee.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. And thanks to our guests, Scott Reed, a former executive director of the Republican National Committee and a Republican strategist, and to Steve McMahon, political strategist and media advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign in 2004. They were both kind enough to be with us here in Studio 3A. Ken Rudin's going to stay with us. When we come back, we're going to focus on South Carolina and also look ahead and talk about the African-American vote and how that's going to change things in this campaign season. This is an NPR News special. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are headlines from other stories we're following here today. The Supreme Court heard arguments on the nation's strictest voter ID law in Indiana, which requires people to show photo ID before casting a ballot. The law is backed by Republicans. Supporters say it's aimed at deterring voter fraud. Also, President Bush met in Jerusalem today with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. The president hopes to revive peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians and urged Prime Minister Olmert to shut down Israeli settler outposts in the West Bank. Details on those stories and more coming up later on All Things Considered from NPR News. We've been looking at results from New Hampshire and what they mean for the campaigns, and now we want to look ahead to talk about what they mean in South Carolina. A little bit later, we're going to be talking with Clarence Page about the African-American vote and what's going to happen there. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, is with us, and we have three phone lines for you today. If you're an independent, our number is 800-989-8255. For Republicans, the number is 800-344-3893, and for Democrats, 800-344-3864. The email is still talk@npr.org. Joining us now is Andy Gobile. He's the host of The Big Picture, a weekly news and public affairs program in South Carolina. He joins us from the studios of ETV in Columbia, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Anytime, Neil. Ken, how are you?
How are you?
Good. And South Carolina, well, just to be different, holds, two primaries, one for Democrats and one for Republicans on different days. Of particular interest, it's the first primary state with a more diverse population, a large number of African-American voters. And what are South Carolinians saying about how they plan to vote?
Well, it's going to be interesting. Same thing that we heard in Iowa and in New Hampshire. But one of the things, as you pointed out, is, yes, of course, we have to be contrarian here in the Palmetto State. The Republicans are going to go on Saturday the 19th, the Democrats on Saturday the 26th. And these are open primaries. Anybody can go in there. But it is going to be interesting with the Republican race first, just to see how many independents, how many moderate Republicans are actually going to go vote. I was talking with somebody with Senator Obama's campaign today, and they still, as they have in Iowa and in New Hampshire, are going to go after those independents and, in some cases, moderate Republicans. But with the tenor of the Republican campaign, and as exciting as that's going to be, who's to say how many independents will be available the week later for Senator Obama to go after? We recently partnered with Winthrop University to conduct a series of polls and came up with something that is similar to what's going on nationwide. For the likely GOP voters, it's immigration, immigration, and immigration. And for the Democrats, it's the war, it's health care, and the economy.
Interestingly, you mentioned John McCain. South Carolina in 2000 was where his momentum came to a dead stop and his campaign effectively ended. How does he look set now as he goes into, well, first Michigan and then South Carolina?
Well, he's campaigning for this since 1999, to be honest with you. I don't know how many times I've heard the line about he slept like a baby after the 2000 election. He'd wake up, cry, fall back asleep for an hour, wake up, cry. And, you know, it was the line that he used frequently. But he, for all intents and purposes, has been campaigning here in South Carolina since that election in 2000. He has garnered some of the top operatives. He's gone after some of the evangelicals who really went against him eight years ago. So it looks as if he is going to do pretty well. But what will be unique is this partnership, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess, between he and Mike Huckabee is now going to be torn asunder, I'm sure, as they will go after each other and they will go after Governor Romney for the Republican voters.
Yeah, Senator McCain, as you said, amends to some of the evangelical community that did not support him last time around. But with Mike Huckabee energizing that part of the electorate, does he stand much chance with them this time around?
He does. And as I had said, he made an entree into that. However, you may realize, of course, the name that everybody thinks of when you think of evangelicals here in South Carolina, Bob Jones. Bob Jones III, the grandson, or the great-grandson of the university's namesake, has come out in support of Mitt Romney. And that happened a few months ago. So it is going to be interesting to see where Huckabee's base is going to be. Some are saying that he's going to go after those in the Christian community who are more, for lack of a better term, mid-level. Mitt Romney going after the more name, and John McCain going after whomever he can go after and has been doing so for the past 8 years.
On the Democratic side, you mentioned Barack Obama seems to have a pretty substantial lead in the polls there.
He does have a substantial lead in the polls. But again, in the poll that we did, the largest number there was undecided at that one point. And there is this, you know, you've heard of the NASCAR dads and the soccer moms. The person who is going to make the difference here in the Democratic primary is going to be the middle-aged, perhaps a little bit older, African-American church-going woman who is still undecided. Senator Obama, Senator Clinton are going to do everything they can to go after them, including, I don't know how many times we've heard about they're going into beauty shops. It is the beauty shop mom, I guess, is the name of the stereotypical voter that they're trying to get to bring to their side for this vote on the 26th of January.
Also that South Carolina was one of the places where Oprah Winfrey rallied for her candidate, Barack Obama.
She did. There were about 30,000 people here. It was supposed to be at a stadium that housed 18,000, and they were giving tickets away, but they had to move it to USC's football stadium, and it was, some would say, perhaps the most exciting thing that happened there this fall, despite USC's football prowess and Coach Spurrier. But they had about 30,000 people who showed up, and there were Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Whites, Blacks, Hispanics, all there, obviously, to see Oprah, but also they got a great taste of politics to see what was going on. One of the interesting things that's going on here now, Neil and Ken, you remember what happened in 2000 and what derailed Senator McCain were the negative campaigns and the negative campaigning. And the Obama staffer I spoke with earlier today said, I said, do you think that you have to be conversant or cognizant of this as you go forward with the Clinton campaign? And with no hesitation whatsoever, he said yes. They are starting to monitor this right now. They're concerned about push polling. They're concerned about emails. They're monitoring the lesser listened to AM urban stations where something may be said. They're monitoring the mailings. It's going to be an interesting and dare I say, ugly campaign, unfortunately.
Well, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Claude. Claude with us from Astoria, Oregon, on the Independent line.
Yes, I'm totally disgusted with Mr. McCain's attitude. He sings a song, Bomb, 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 Iran, and now he is saying it's okay with him to leave the troops in Iraq for 100 years. You know, we've had 7 years of warmongering. Are we going to have some more of that?
Ken Rudin, let me turn to you on this question. John McCain, among the more aggressive of the Republican candidates, his pro-war stance at this point, is that a positive or a negative for him?
Well, if you're trying to get the Republican nomination, I suspect it would be a positive. The only Republican I've heard, I guess anybody's heard, questioning the wisdom of the war, if not outright opposition to the war, is Ron Paul, who got about 8%, 9% of the vote yesterday in New Hampshire, and it probably, you know, may not do much better in South Carolina, which I suspect is more pro-military. But McCain, his argument has always been not so much that President Bush is doing the right thing or the wrong thing, but the strategy has not always been the way it should have been. And he says that with the General Petraeus in charge now, the war is going better. But if you're trying to get if you're looking at the general election in November, that could be a different story because overwhelming number of voters oppose the conduct of the war and oppose Senator McCain's approach to it.
Andy Gobiel, let me ask you one more question, and that's about the other Democratic candidate, John Edwards, who can't seem to get a lot of traction at this point. He was born in South Carolina, of course, was a senator from North Carolina, did well in South Carolina last time around. So what are his chances there?
Well, I'm not sure. Have you guys heard that his dad worked in a mill?
I have heard that, yes.
All his
life.
Yes,
exactly. No, yes, he was born in Seneca. It's a town in the upstate, one of the mills, and obviously it closed down. And we are quite familiar with the story, and he continues to talk about it. I wasn't able to gain traction in the past few months. He devoted much of his time and effort and energy to Iowa. From what I understand, he was hoping to get a bump from Iowa, do well in New Hampshire, and then come on down to South Carolina. He did win South Carolina 4 years ago. It was the only race that he did win against John Kerry. But it looks, and in the conversation I heard earlier, here. I have to agree. It looks as if it is a two-person race right now, barring something catastrophic for either Senators Obama or Clinton. He's doing well, Senator Edwards, but not quite well enough. So I think that right now it is a two-person race on the Democratic side. Why is Senator Edwards not doing well? Still not sure. We've been trying to figure that one out. I think it's just there's two stars in the firmament right now that are just eclipsing him, unfortunately for him, and that's, happens to be what the case is in 2008.
And we should note that polls have been known to be wrong. But, Ken, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's what I've heard, yes.
Ken?
And if John Edwards can't win in South Carolina, you wonder where he can win because, as Andy says, it was the only state he won in 2004. And if he does not survive past South Carolina, again, the momentum could shift towards Barack Obama because if you make the argument that Obama and Edwards were the so-called agents of change, well, they got 53% of the vote yesterday in New Hampshire, and that's a pretty big number. If it's a one-on-one race.
And if I could, Ken, quick, one of the things that I found kind of interesting, though, is that Senator Edwards was kind of going after the typical Democrats, the stereotypical Democrats that Senator Clinton was going after. So I think that, if he were to go, I think it would be a wash for both Senators Clinton and Obama.
Andy Gobiel, thanks very much for your time today.
Sure. Thank you, guys.
Andy Gobiel, host of The Big Picture, a weekly news and public affairs program in South Carolina, with us from the studios of ETV in Columbia. As we mentioned, South Carolina is the first primary state with a large number of African-American voters. Race has been one of the underlying issues of this campaign. Remember the questions, is Obama black enough? Is America ready for a black president? Well, joining us here in Studio 3A to talk about this is Clarence Page, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and nationally syndicated columnist with the Chicago Tribune. And always a pleasure to have you with us. A
pleasure to be here, Neil.
And another one of those questions was, could Barack Obama even win an election? We found out in Iowa that he certainly could. How has that changed the way people, both black and white, are viewing the prospect of an Obama candidacy?
Well, I think we saw the firmament move with Iowa to from where Obama was a possibility to being a certainty. And I think there was some irrational exuberance. I must confess to falling prey to it myself. I mean, Monday morning I came to the office and I looked at the polling results and I said, semi-literally, I don't believe these polls. Half of me didn't believe those polls. I said,
half of you was right.
This gap has got to shrink, yeah. And little did I know, actually, in all fairness to the pollsters, I think they were right over the weekend, but the Clintons changed the percentages there. And as we heard earlier, they won the majority of those people who decided at the last minute. And I say they, because I think Bill and Hillary were definitely a team here, and Bill Clinton did the same thing, we must remember, back in 92 on that last weekend before the New Hampshire primary. He closed the gap, narrowed the gap enough to claim that he was the comeback kid. And I think we saw a similar thing happen here for some of the reasons that have been mentioned in the discussion earlier.
The Clintons are also extremely popular in the African-American community, though.
Very much so.
Not so long ago, people in South Carolina, a lot of pollsters were asking them, and they say, well, Barack Obama's not running as a black candidate. Hillary Clinton's closer to our issues.
Isn't it funny how the conversations go, Neil? I mean, you either hear that Barack Obama's not black enough, or you hear worries that maybe he's too black, and especially in the postmortems as people look at New Hampshire and look at South Carolina coming up. But his numbers among black folks have steadily gone up. I think African-American voters had an understandable skepticism of him initially. They didn't know him. And I think the last time we saw a knee-jerk response nationally in polls among African-Americans was with Clarence Thomas, when he was under fire from Anita Hill and up there in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
This is the Supreme Court then-nominee and now-justice.
Then-nominee, exactly. You saw from the NAACP leaders and others a circle-the-wagon response, which has been typical in such circumstances for African-Americans. What we saw in New Hampshire was a circle-the-wagon response among women. That last a woman caller you had earlier here talking about how Hillary Clinton hadn't been given her due and that Barack Obama got an advantage by being a man. The same thing Gloria Steinem said in her op-ed piece in the New York Times. I think the Obama campaign was surprised by how much of a circle the wagons effect happened among younger women who Obama won in Iowa, didn't win them this time. And we saw Hillary Clinton on a number of occasions, but one really dramatic at the time of her acceptance speech. In the background, we saw young women. Out in Iowa, you saw older folks in the background, and those were folks who she did much better with before. Obviously, she's expanded her reach, and Barack Obama's got to watch out because Bill Clinton, our first black president, quote unquote, does have a lot of reach and a lot of old guard black Democratic leaders in South Carolina and elsewhere, especially down south, who owe the Clintons a lot, and they're going to support them quite heavily.
After New Hampshire, we're talking about South Carolina and beyond. We're specifically talking with Clarence Page, the syndicated columnist. You're listening to an NPR News special. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is, Zeta, is that right?
No, it's Zeb.
Zeb, excuse me. And you're calling from Lodi in California. Go ahead, please. I apologize.
My big concern is that people are putting too much focus on, you know, whether we're going to have the first black president or the first white, or woman, rather, in office. I think that we should be focusing more on what are they actually going to do for the country rather than, you know, they're going to help out black people or they're going to help out all the women. Is that really a reality?
Do you see?
Well, I'd agree with you if there was that much more difference between them ideologically. But I think what we're deciding here is what Democratic voters are deciding is who their nominee is going to go up against the Republicans. And so everything comes into account here. Democrats are very concerned about having somebody who can beat Republicans, and Republicans are just as concerned about having somebody electable against Democrats. So it's not just issues or to turn it around. Electability becomes an issue, and the history effect. There's no question that a lot of folks turned out to vote in Iowa and New Hampshire to be a part of history, whether it's to be a part of electing the first black president or the first black the first female president or nominee. That history effect, I think, is very real out there. So as important as the issues are, I would not discount that effect of that really led to the record breaking turnouts we've seen so far.
Thanks for the call, Zeb, and I apologize for mangling your name earlier.
That's all right. It happens all the time.
Okay, bye-bye. And Clarence Page, is Barack Obama's candidacy a conundrum for black Republicans?
You know, it's interesting. Black Republicans, for the most part, I should say some of the leading voices have been strikingly supportive of Obama, or complimentary, I should say, of Obama. Rush Limbaugh, Bill Bennett, George Will.
None of those are black.
A lot of folks, yeah. None of them are black. Now, I'm sorry, when you say a conundrum for black Republicans, if he gets the nomination, I think it's a pleasant conundrum, actually. But Shelby Steele, a well-known black conservative voice, has a short book out right now in which he refers to the double bind that Barack Obama is in. I think Shelby Steele, as formidable as he is as an essayist, I mean, brilliant in so many ways, I think his essay was premature because Steele was talking about how much trouble Obama's going to have trying to satisfy blacks and whites. He appears to have bridged that problem with a remarkable ease. But I think for black conservatives, many of them, most of the black Republicans I know, have been complaining for years about their own party taking them for granted, that there have been many outreach opportunities that George Bush didn't take, that various other Republicans didn't take. There's a long way from Jack Kemp to Pat Buchanan, say, you know. So I think in many ways, many black Republicans will be happy to see some competition.
Clarence Page, thanks again.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Ken Rudin joined us from New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord. Ken, thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thanks to the folks here at New Hampshire Public Radio.
This has been a special from NPR News after the New Hampshire primary. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.